Good morning.
Good morning.
I hate whenever I have to start the sermon by feeling like I'm in an old Verizon commercial. Can you hear me now? Not the sound guy's fault. My fault. Didn't have it turned on. I'm glad to be here today with all of you. I'm glad that we can spend this time together. I'm going to say something that might sound rude. It's not. It's actually a compliment. If you know me, you know it's a compliment, but I'll explain it anyway. The more often I come to church, the more I feel that this reminds me of the Lord of the Rings when the hobbits finally meet the Ents, the giant lumbering trees. And the hobbits all think the Ents move too slowly, and they do everything too slowly, and they're not in a big enough hurry. But the more that time goes on, the more that I appreciate having a space in which time can move more slowly. I think we're all in such a big hurry. And it's nice to come together and slow down for just a little bit. So I'm glad to be here with all of you, to see faces I haven't seen for a while, to have weather that means more of us can be here, and to spend this time worshiping with all of you. The sermon text today is from Luke 4. This is a very particular kind of text. It's a very timely text, in fact, because Jesus is going to declare a year of Jubilee. And this happens to be, technically speaking, one of those years of Jubilee. It really is. The year 2025 is also a year of Jubilee. This is a time in which the people of Israel expected something in particular. They expected renewal, restoration. They expected things to be balanced out, that those who had outstanding debts could start over fresh, those who had been taken advantage of and lost everything could have it restored. And I don't think that we are in a very different boat. I think that sounds a little similar to the expectations around us. A lot of us are ready for restoration, for renewal, fresh starts. And so the words that Jesus has to offer in Luke 4 in Nazareth all those years ago still, I think, captures some of those same hopes. He's returned to Galilee, and the news of his teachings, his miracles, it's spreading quickly. And in his hometown, he stands up to read this particular passage from the prophet Isaiah, brimming with hope and promise of God's justice. But the moment is more than a reading. Nobody else knew that when they came to church that day. They just showed up, but they got more than just another sermon. It's an announcement, a declaration that today's the day. And his words echo this deep longing of God's people for restoration, to reveal that the promises of Scripture are really being fulfilled here, now. So as we listen, I want you to open up your hearts to that desire for restoration, for renewal, for freshness, and the possibility that it really could start today. The word of the Lord from Luke chapter 4, verses 14 through 21. Then Jesus, in the power of the Spirit, returned to Galilee, and a report about him spread through all the surrounding region. He began to teach in their synagogues and was praised by everyone. When he came to Nazareth, where he had been raised, he went to the synagogue, and on the Sabbath day, as was his custom, he stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him. He unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to set free those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And he rolled up the scroll. He gave it back to the attendant, and he sat down. Pause for a narrator's interruption. Everybody in the room was incredibly happy. That was the shortest sermon. They were done. They didn't have to pretend to care. They didn't have to try to stay awake. They could go home and take a nap. And the eyes of everyone in the synagogue fixed on him. And they all expected something, right? They either expected him to say something, to do something, because that's what they were there for, but they were also relieved because they didn't have to pretend. They didn't know what was next. Did he forget he was supposed to add something? And then, after what I assume was a deliberate long pause, then he began to say to them, "Today, this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." And no matter what everyone else in that room expected, it wasn't that. No matter what it was, nobody saw it coming. Because you don't think that you live in one of those times when Scripture is fulfilled. You don't. None of us are walking around thinking, yep, we sing it, we sing these are the days of Elijah, but we don't go around acting like it, we don't go around feeling like it. None of us assume that this is the moment in which our names will be written down in history. If you do, we tend to medicate you. We don't do that. It was not what anyone expected. He returns to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and his reputation has grown. People are eager to see and hear the hometown hero. When he arrives, the setting is familiar. Nothing has changed. The community still gathers to worship at the exact same time and place, just like we do. We still gather for Bible class at 9:30 every week. It's a good class. We're enjoying it. You should come. We'd love to have you. Worship at 10:30. Nothing changes for the most part. The reading of Scripture happens. We read Scripture. We do the same things. We anticipate sermons, teachings. But what happened was anything but ordinary. That was the one Sunday when something was different at church. He hands the scroll of Isaiah to Jesus, the same guy that probably hands the scroll to whoever's teaching every week. He reads a passage that speaks of liberation and restoration, good news to the poor, release for the captives, sight for the blind, freedom for the oppressed. We know this song. It's a passage of hope. It's a reminder of God's promises to bring justice. But nobody thinks it's about them. They think it's about later. Somebody else will get to have that, but right now we don't have it. Good for that person. But he finishes reading, and they expect the normal sermon pointing to future fulfillment of this prophecy. You can still believe in this, and it'll happen one day. But instead, he says, it's happening right here, right now. He identifies himself as the one through whom God's promises are being realized. He announces that God's kingdom is breaking into the room. It disrupts all expectations. The people knew oppression underneath Rome and their own leaders, regrettably. They know what poverty is like. They know the pain of exile. They long for deliverance. Rome promises deliverance. They promise peace. They know that's not really true. The peace of Rome is not what they want. But they still expect something to happen through the normal channels, perhaps political or military. So the zealots are out there waging guerrilla warfare, battle by battle. Maybe they'll bring change. They don't expect it from a carpenter's son from their own village. You just don't expect that. So he challenges their understanding of how God's justice arrives and who benefits from it. His words stir both hope and resistance, confronting a community full of assumptions about what God's kingdom is and what their place is in it. And standing before his own community, he declares that the promises of Isaiah are no longer a distant hope, but a present reality. Today is the day. And these words reveal that God's kingdom has arrived, not in the future, but now through the life and ministry of the carpenter's kid who grew up down the street. It's a moment that is absolutely saturated with grace. He proclaims good news to the poor, emphasizing that God sees and values those the world usually tries very hard to not look at. He announces the release of captives, which speaks not only to physical imprisonment, but also to the spiritual, to the emotional, to the societal chains that bind people. The recovery of sight for the blind offers both literal healing and some sort of spiritual illumination, inviting people to see God's truth. Freedom for the oppressed assures that God's justice is for everyone, including those who are trapped by systems of inequality or personal gain. The grace is also evident in just the way that he fulfills the scriptures. His mission is not just words, but he's been out there doing things too. Twice the text tells us he's out there doing things before he preaches. Throughout his ministry, he's embodying this announcement by healing the sick. He's feeding the hungry. He is forgiving sinners. He is restoring the outcast. He's revealing that God's justice is not merely punitive, it's restorative. It's aimed at healing and reconciliation. In this declaration, we see the very heart of God, a kingdom where grace flows freely, restoring dignity and inviting everyone into the joy of liberation. And yet, 2,000 years later, poverty, captivity, oppression remains a pervasive reality for many people. Jesus proclaimed good news to the poor, and countless individuals still live without access to basic needs, food, shelter. Flint, Michigan still needs clean water, health care. And the system, it often regrettably, and maybe not even intentionally, perpetuates these cycles that we get stuck in of poverty, inequality, leaving entire communities feeling unseen, forgotten. Captivity takes many forms in our world. There's literal imprisonment, there's addiction, there's fear. There's just so much fear floating around out there. Spiritual bondage. Our physical prisons are overcrowded, often filled with individuals who are disproportionately marginalized. Others feel trapped in economic systems or relationships or jobs that just seem impossible to escape. And these forms of captivity remind us that freedom is just not yet a reality for everyone. And oppression, it persists. That's what it does. Whether that's through pickinism, racism, sexism, classism, the other isms, all the other forms of discrimination, systems of power benefit a few, but often at the exploitation of others. Injustices just, they leave scars on individuals, on societies, that take a long time to heal. And it makes this promise of liberation seem distant or impossible. So now, we've showed up to the same sermon on a different millennia, but with the same expectations, haven't we? The people in Nazareth heard Isaiah and thought, not for me. Somebody else down the line. You've shown up here in Arlington and heard Luke 4 and thought, not for me. Someone else down the line. He means it. He really does, but it's not today. Many people wrestle with that and all sorts of other inner struggles, anxiety, depression, this sense of hopelessness just feels like the chains that hold us back from experiencing joy on purpose. And the world, it longs for justice and freedom. It just doesn't believe it's possible anymore. It longs for what he's offering, but people just, we look for solutions in the wrong places, the wrong people, the wrong power, the wrong wealth, the wrong forces. Everything seems to fall short. It leaves us longing for healing, for restoration, until we just can't hope anymore. Until you show up on a Sunday like this and you hear good news, and you just automatically assume it's good news for somebody else. somewhere else, sometime else. The challenge for us is somehow to recognize where God's justice is already at work and to join in its unfolding in the world. This announcement in Luke 4 was not confined to that one synagogue in Galilee or to some other day in the future. It is a present invitation to actively today participate in the ongoing work of God's kingdom. It hasn't stopped. The things that were proclaimed in Nazareth in Luke 4 have not ever stopped. They're ongoing. The grace that is proclaimed all those years ago continues to break into our world today. And through the Spirit, Jesus' mission of justice, for healing, for liberation, is very much alive in this world, in the church, and in us. Because we become God's grace at work in the world. Every time we advocate for the poor, when we stand for justice, we offer little things, the practical help that we give to those who are in need, when we care for the marginalized, when we choose to welcome the stranger, or when we stand with the oppressed, we are the embodiment of the good news that proclaims in Luke 4. It's not just charity, it's not just the right thing, it's not just a good thing. It's the fulfillment of God's kingdom values, where all are seen, where all are valued, and where all are set free. And simultaneously, we are personally experiencing freedom from the things that bind us, whether that's fear or addiction or feelings of unworthiness, doesn't matter, whatever it is, the offer is there for restoration. Because this kingdom is a place where we can find not only healing, but also purpose as members of Christ's body. So as Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 12, we are united as one body, with each member uniquely gifted to contribute to the kingdom. Together, we reflect God's justice, God's grace, showing the world what it means to live in freedom. God's good news in the world lives in and through the church. So the question then is, how do we respond to this call to proclaim good news, to join in this kingdom work today? There's lots of different ways we can express this idiomatic idea, I think. We could say something about, it's not what God can do for you, it's what you can do for God's kingdom. That would work, I guess. It's a bit on the nose and awkward to synthesize those two things, but we do that these days. We could say something like, if you want to see good things in the world, you have to be those good things in the world. Or we could say that more negatively and say, if you haven't seen God's freedom for the captives, or God's grace, or God's justice, or the things that Jesus is proclaiming in Luke 4, it's because you're not doing them. We've heard that sermon before too. But that one's just guilt-ridden, isn't it? True, but guilt-ridden. Or more interestingly, I've heard recently a phrase that I happen to like a lot. The world is full of good people. If you can't see one, then be one. I think that works really well. If you look around you and you don't see what Jesus has proclaimed as reality, it's because perhaps God is waiting for you to make it so. That's our role in this story. We're not only just the prisoners, only just the blind, only just the captives. We are also those who are setting free the captives, taking the foot off of the neck of the oppressed. That is what the church is called to do. So if you came to Arlington and you heard Luke 4 and you thought, good news for someone tomorrow, that's absolutely right. Because tomorrow you will make it so. The church brings this reality into the world. The kingdom that's breaking into this story is the church that is breaking into the world. Things are awful. So we shine a light a little brighter. And it may not be much. We can't fix all of it. But in the world around us, with the people around us, we can shine a little light, bring a little grace, some mercy, some comfort. We can do that. We do that. And this meal that we're about to partake of reminds us of the kingdom that has been announced, a kingdom of justice and freedom and restoration. It's a bit Arthurian, but at this table we are all equals. We're all welcomed, not because of our status or worthiness, but because God's love and mercy has been given to everyone. This bread, this cup, it's signs of his body broken, his blood shed, the ultimate act of liberation, of reconciliation. It's through that sacrifice that we have been set free from the bonds of sin and death and the fear of death. And we've been invited into the joy of a new life in this amazing kingdom. So as we share this meal, let us remember that we are not only recipients who have been set free, but also participants in this mission to set others free. And I hope that this table, this day, this gathering of slowing down amidst all the hurriedness of the world, can strengthen us, nourish us, embolden us to embody the justice, the love of Christ, the year of God's favor in the world around us. Let's stand and sing.